Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces episode 113. Today we are going to be having a special guest join us. She is the lovely Ella Huff. She is the daughter of Lisa Huff, who joins us occasionally every week. So I have been looking forward to this space, for about a month and a half. I've been working with Ella trying to get her to come on, figure it out with her schedule. And as you will find during this interview today, she has a lot on her plate. So I'm interested to pick her brain on this, get to know, kind of some of the ins and outs, and it's just going to be a fantastic conversation. So I do want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Ella, it looks like we're having some trouble bringing you up on here. You might have to leave and then rejoin, and I'll try and bring it up that way. And I apologize, Spaces is kind of glitchy. But we do have the chat box open in the bottom right. So if you have any questions for Ella or for any of us up here, go ahead and feel free to put a question in there. If you want to, go ahead and request to come up. I'd love to get some listeners coming on here and get them to ask their questions. And also, if you don't mind, go to the very top and go ahead and reshare, retweet this space so we can get a lot of people coming in here. Again, this is going to be a fantastic one to listen to this morning. And we have Bob Van Kirk up here on the panel this morning. We missed you yesterday, Bob. How you been?
Good morning, Coleman. Good morning, everybody. Really good. It's a beautiful Wednesday, and yeah, looking forward to the conversation with Miss Ella.
And we have Miss Ella up here on the stage right now. So good morning, ma'am. How are you?
Good morning, Coleman. Good morning, Bob. I'm well, thank you. How are you both?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking. So Ella, I want to start this off, we'll go ahead and start rolling into this, but just tell, for those who aren't familiar with you and what you're doing, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, where you're going to university, and some of the programs that you've started?
Yes, absolutely. My name is Ella Huff. I am in my last semester at Cornell. Time is really flying. It's kind of crazy. And on campus, I run our Cornell Bitcoin Club, as well as a study that we are doing with the Brooks Tech Policy Institute. I'm happy to share more about this, but we are essentially doing the first study to look at Bitcoin adoption and financial freedom across 25 different countries. And then outside of school, I also run the Bitcoin Students Network with Arsh Malu, who works at the Human Rights Foundation. And the Cornell Bitcoin Club is a node of that, which we can also dive into. And I'm also the project lead at Generation Bitcoin. It's really Arsh, who I mentioned earlier, Autumn and Ashana, other students who really welcomed me into this space and brought me in. So a lot of the different projects that I work on is just how can we, you know, help kind of serve as a bridge to get more young students into the space.
Well, that is a lot going on there. So let's break it down and let's start off with what you're doing with at Cornell. And you started the group, the Cornell Bitcoin Club. What were some of the hurdles you faced when you wanted to go launch that?
Yeah, I mean, so across universities for a long, long time, there have been many blockchain clubs. And when I transferred to Cornell for my second year of university. I started at NYU Shanghai, although it was all online. We couldn't actually end up making it there because of visa issues with then the Delta variant and Omicron variant arising. And so when I got to Cornell, I had also just returned from the Oslo Freedom Forum that the Human Rights Foundation puts on every summer in June. And that was really kind of the tipping point for me to fall down the rabbit hole. I had first learned of Bitcoin when I was in high school. I was working at IBM for a couple years and heard about it there. And then my mom learned about it before me. And so we would kind of talk about it here and there. And I also took a class in high school that covered it. And the Gary Gensler open courseware, the MIT course, like blockchain and money. So it was kind of in the background, but not my real focus area. Fast forward, I went to the Human Rights Foundation Oslo Freedom Forum, and that was kind of when I say everything clicked. And I, you know, was transferring to Cornell, and I was just like, you know, how can I spend as much time and energy learning about this? I feel like the point of college is really to embrace the unknown and ask questions, and this is like the most interdisciplinary topic I can find and will have a really meaningful impact on our world. So I went to campus activities and said, hey, you know, I'd really like to start a Bitcoin club. And they were nice about it. They said, look, you know, you need 10 people to start a club. And I didn't know 10 people yet. And they said, you know, we really also prefer if students can join a club that's maybe similar in nature before starting a new one. We already have, you know, more than 1,000 clubs on campus. And so I said, okay, you know, fair. Like, I will go join the blockchain club and I'll kind of, you know, be the Bitcoiner in that club. And I was in it for a year and a half. But then, it just really came to the point of, Ella, you know, way more than 10 people now. You can do this. Go start a Bitcoin club. So I did. And along the process, I realized, you know, wow, this is really time consuming to do this. There's kind of a lot in the background you need to do before you can actually, you know, hold your first meeting. And in, kind of in parallel amongst all of this, when I was transferring to Cornell, I saw they had an independent major in the College of Arts and Sciences. And so I wrote up a proposal to study Bitcoin as an independent major. And we can dive into that as well. But fast forward 15 months, both the major, it's not technically a major. It's a, what's called the College Scholar Program, and it's a Bitcoin focused study inside of that major. The club and that were approved at the same time. And kind of the takeaway was, you know, Bitcoin's really important for young people to know about. But if they go online and look at a school kind of top down, they're not going to see Bitcoin as a worthwhile study and all that that encompasses. So how can we just help students more bottom up, very in line with the ethos of Bitcoin, learn about it? And so basically just open sourced everything that I did for the Cornell Club and started the Bitcoin Students Network. And now we have like 1,500 students across 69 countries that are all, you know, at some stage of building a Bitcoin kind of student community in their area.
So you started this, or you got this class to be started at Cornell. Are you teaching it, or who is leading that that program?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just writing a document, and I wrote, you know, the first question I always get is, who's teaching this class that you are studying? So I'm glad you asked the question. It is, so for some background, I went online when I was transferring, looking at all of kind of the major minor options. What can I study? I was at NYU doing computer science and Chinese. And I saw that they had just that summer when I was transferring started a cognitive science major. So what that is, it's computer science, psychology, philosophy, and linguistics. And when I was applying to schools, and I applied to like 30 different schools, I really wanted to study cognitive science because I felt like it was the best major that would perhaps help me ask questions or just be more question focused rather than answer focused. And so I thought, okay, great, let me switch over to that. And then I kept scrolling and I got to I, it's all alphabetical. And I saw independent major and I was like, okay, I'm going to start with cognitive science, but in the background, I'm going to work to put together this independent major on Bitcoin. And you have to write a proposal, you know, have some meetings and find a professor to kind of sponsor it so that it theoretically lives on once you graduate. But no one else does it. It's still independent in yours. And I could never find a professor who would support it. A lot would say, you know, blockchain is the true innovation here. Think you should study the gold standard. You think your, you know, thoughts aren't really formed yet. You would benefit from an established curriculum to, oh, this sounds like a hard rock metal band, then a money. And so I just kind of kept at it. And then I learned about the College Scholar Program, the Robert S. Harrison College Scholar Program. And it's very similar, but actually a little bit more in depth. That is your major, College Scholar. And what it is it's an independent kind of study of your choosing that you design. So same process, submit a course list, a proposal, like a research proposal, why you want to study it. But then you also build a committee, and then you defend your thesis come May of your senior year. So that's what I'll do in a couple months. And in this one, kind of all, you know, any distribution requirements or college requirements, they all go away, and you just get to choose what you want to study. And so I'm not taking any Bitcoin course. They really don't exist. But rather what I'm doing is I'm just taking classes and what I'm learning and kind of applying it over to how I see the connections made to Bitcoin. And I'll just add a caveat, like any student anywhere can do this, because even before I had it officially approved, I would just turn all of my essays into essays about Bitcoin or write about it in like the margins of my class notes. So short answer, no actual Bitcoin class. I have a spreadsheet kind of tracking a lot of different professors across the world that have programs, and happy to share that for people that are interested. They exist kind of sporadically. And Bradley Rettler at the University of Wyoming and Andrew Bailey, who wrote the amazing book Resistance Money with Craig Warmicky, they're starting a Bitcoin Research Institute. So that'll be really great as well.
Well, that's awesome. And so the class isn't there yet, but what are your plans outside of school? Like once you finish, like do you have it set up so that these programs and these organizations you've created at Cornell, do they have someone that's going to fill in your role, or do you always just plan on just kind of going back to make sure it continues?
Yes. So how I set up the Cornell Club is, I kind of wrote myself out before the end of my time here. And so I transitioned over the club, this semester. We have 12 new students who have kind of taken over our minor board. A lot of schools call it like your executive board, your e-board, and they have applications to join and all of that, but I felt that was very not in line with the ethos of Bitcoin. There is no application to participate in this space or use Bitcoin. And so it's not perfect. There probably needs to be more iterations, but we kind of have like a proof of work cluster model. So you can be a hodler, a node, or a miner. And it's basically you can move amongst the tiers depending how much time and energy you can provide. And so we have 12 people who are now running it transitioned it all over to them, and they are doing a great job. And then for the Bitcoin Students Network, this one also has kind of an ethos of decentralized, not disorganized. So we don't dictate what any of the clubs do. It's for instance, you can, there's a link tree, which actually you put in the Nest, one of the Layer Zero programs. If you click on our handle, you can see everything. But basically all the resources are up there. And theoretically it doesn't need me. I'm still involved with it after I graduate. But theoretically it's good on its own.
How many other campuses or colleges participate in that program?
Yeah, so the numbers, so we have about more than 1,500 students in the network across 69 different countries. But then I was actually just going through this list last week. There's really more like 115-ish across those countries where on different universities where people are very active in building a club. And actually just yesterday we had a new node at ITAM in Mexico City, and I see Lynn. So that's exciting.
I'm sorry, you cut out there at that very last part. What happened at Mexico City?
Oh, no, just a new node came out yesterday. It's at a university called ITAM. And Lynn, who I see in the audience, she's been super supportive with them and La Casa de Satoshi. And so that was just kind of exciting news of the week so far.
Well, that's awesome. And thank you, Lynn, for helping out with that. What initiatives have you found to be the most effective in fostering interest in these organizations? Is it just grassroots getting out there and talking, or is it, do you find that it's also kind of driven by price?
Actually, not entirely. So I started this club last January. The price was much lower and we had much more consistent turnout, than for instance we did this past fall semester. You know, I don't actually have any evidence to back this up, but a lot of people, you know, on campus here, when I talk to them and mention Bitcoin, their response is something along the lines of, you know, oh, it's just, it's too expensive. I can't, you know, I don't have money to buy a whole Bitcoin. And so part of what I'm taking away from that is if the price is, you know, 30,000 or 100,000, it's like, it's still just out of reach if you don't yet understand the concept of Satoshis. Obviously, when price goes up, you know, a lot more, people get more interested. Like, I had a text earlier this yesterday, someone sent me a link, to a tweet they saw and was just like, oh, pretty hype. So, you know, price helps as opposed to price crashing. But what I think really gets people engaged is when they can be a part of it and when there's a hands-on project. So for instance, I mentioned earlier, this study that we're doing, and really it's giving, we have 10 club members working on it, the opportunity to really learn by doing and kind of do that in a more supported, you know, I help answer questions. That's more engaging than just sitting for a lecture. You know, every week we would meet every week on Wednesdays. And so, that's one piece. I also see Lucas, he's starting a club at the University of Maryland. So maybe once his is up and running, he'll also have some good learning and insights for us. But I think more than anything, it's, also really cater to what the students interested in. At the beginning of every semester, I kind of poll people, you know, what are you curious about? What would you like to learn about? Because it really doesn't matter what I think is interesting. It matters what others think and how can just, you know, help them on that learning journey. So yeah, specific initiatives, projects, and then trying to let your club members decide the direction as much as possible. And then the final piece, which we just started in January or launched in January, is this internship program that we're calling Layer Zero. And so this is going to give students, you can, no matter where you are in the world, you can apply. You just need to be kind of in the age range of 18 to 22. And it's an all expenses paid internship to go work with Bitcoin communities around the world and really strengthen this idea of Layer Zero, kind of the social human peer-to-peer network of Bitcoin.
How are you getting funding for that, Ella?
Yes, yeah, so we, Chain Code Labs, in New York City, they are funding it.
I'm not familiar with Chain Code Labs.
Yeah, so Chain Code Labs, actually, I don't even know how to add stuff in the nest, but they do a lot with Bitcoin developers. And then they also, if people want to Google like the Bitcoin Dev Kit or the Bitcoin Dev Project, they basically have created an incredible amount of resources to learn Bitcoin development, kind of fall down that rabbit hole. They host in New York City every year a Bitcoin Research Day. I mean, they're probably like one of the oldest groups really working with Bitcoin core devs. And let me see if I can put their handle or share it somehow.
So if you want to share information, you just have to find a tweet. And then on the bottom right of that tweet, there'll be like an arrow. If you just click share, and then you can click share to space. I found something on Chain Code Labs. I threw it up in the nest. So if you want to add anything
else,
you're welcome to.
Okay, great.
Okay, sorry, I got a little lost on there. So 18, how many people do you take for this program?
We don't have a definite number right now, but it's probably going to be about 10.
Is there a lot of interest? Is there, what are the requirements other than just being within the age?
Yeah, so... Yep, there is an application. It just has more questions though, getting at, you know, why are you interested? What is your level? You need to have some knowledge of Bitcoin and experience. It's not just, you know, people that want a free trip, for lack of better eloquent way of saying it. But really, you know, you're committed to Bitcoin and this community and the really meaningful work that is being done around the world to make Bitcoin a tool that is being used in this original sense of peer-to-peer electronic cash system. So yeah, you can see the application. There's, I don't know, maybe like 10, 15 questions on it. And then applications close February 15th. And there will also be a series of interviews, as well after that.
Well, that's awesome. I'm going to go back just a little bit. We were talking about price and that's one of the things I get is people say they can't afford a whole Bitcoin. And it's been like that for a while now. How do you overcome that hurdle? How do you break that down so they really understand that Satoshis make up a whole Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, the super simple analogy of just initially introducing it is, you know, $1 has 100 cents. You kind of just start there. And then I am not sure if people saw Sam, and I hope I don't say his last name wrong, Wooters at River, his presentation from Bitcoin Nashville earlier this summer, but he basically has on his phone an album of photos that he can just really easily kind of access and show people a like a chart or a diagram to aid in the learning. And so as well, like the Jeff Ross, the price of Bitcoin and eggs, or just kind of helping, you can even do like the price of house costs and how, that fiat versus Bitcoin. So, as well in the explanations, any visuals to help guide, I think is also really helpful. He kindly shared his album and you can just go and download the photos. And so I did that. And then I, you know, added some others that I like to reference.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, if you don't mind, if you could find it and or just a link to his profile, and then we can go ahead and put that out there for people to have.
Yeah, I think last time I checked, it was his pinned tweet. So, okay, here it is. And sorry, Coleman, I might just DM this to you because even though I know maybe I should be really good at technology, I never even had social media before Bitcoin, and I still am figuring out Twitter sometimes.
No, you're good. Staying off social media is probably a good thing.
Yeah, it's why you're so level-headed and why you've created this whole program. So it's pretty cool.
Well, thanks.
Sorry, I'm just getting that tweet up there right now. We had a couple questions from the Bitcoin veteran community I want to go ahead and start asking you. What are some of the foundational gaps in education or understanding that needs to be filled in with Gen Z versus millennials and Gen X and boomers?
Okay, so I want to make sure I answer your question. The foundational gaps, like for each different category or for Gen X boomers talking to Gen Z millennials?
No, just like who's understanding it easier and what is everybody missing the same information? Is it kind of widespread or does Gen Z get it at a different aspect? Millennials get it at a different aspect and so forth?
Yeah, I think a couple different ways to answer this question. I do think perspective and the experiences you've had and lived thus far make a pretty decent impact. So for instance, for me, I kind of categorized that I maybe learned about Bitcoin, heard the word, learned the definition that people say, and then I truly discovered it. I had to, as I kind of call it, connect a lot of dots that I had acquired and think, oh, this is, you know, how this makes sense. So, in the US, a lot of my peers here, you know, now this is my third year at Cornell, and there's friends that I've been talking to about Bitcoin for the whole time here, and don't own a few Satoshis yet. And then there's other people that I mention it in 5 minutes and they're like, okay, what do I download? How do I get Bitcoin? I also think I've been given a huge gift of being able to travel to a lot of Bitcoin conferences outside of the US and talk to students there. And they, you know, feel the pain of broken money more than I think in the US, US students do. So that is an impact. So yes, to answer your question, I think you come at it from different perspectives. There's different gaps that exist for everyone. There's also some, assumptions you have to kind of give people permission to lay down as well at first. So a lot of just in the students' side, they'll say, oh, you know, I'm not an econ major. I'm not an engineer. I don't study computer science. I don't get finance. I'm not interested in money. And you don't need to be interested in any of that to truly understand Bitcoin. I don't know how great of an analogy this is, but sometimes I explain Bitcoin as almost like economic oxygen. So if you think about it, in this world around us, we all need oxygen to live and breathe and really fuel the life that we're after. But on a good day, we don't think about it maybe at all. We just, you know, breathe in, breathe out. And so for young people, like, that's what we should get to with Bitcoin. You don't need to take your whole interest and only study Bitcoin. Like, you don't need to be me and spend, you know, every waking second you can learning about it, working for it. It should just kind of exist in the background and let you do whatever it is to you. And so I think, you know, acknowledging that, like, it's okay if you don't know anything, and just helping people along in that journey really goes a long way and get at, you know, what is the point of all of this? Why do we really care about it? And that, I think, is something that can be universal for everyone, no matter what stage of life you're in.
Absolutely. What group do you think is the easiest or your most enjoyable to orange pill?
I mean, I think my peers. that's really my audience. That's who I, you know, talk to more than anyone. But it's also fun, you know, when I guess over the past years, I've been on campus here and I walk in a professor's door and it's like, oh, how's the Bitcoin doing? And now it's like kind of seeing them light bulb go off a little bit. I mean, that's fun because every person matters and every person touches many, many people's lives. And so I think if you can share it with anyone, no matter who they are, that's really exciting. If we're thinking about, though, kind of the adoption curve, so right now it's like 100 million people own Bitcoin or in some capacity. And I think River put out like 80 million people actually custody Bitcoin in some fashion. And so we are so early kind of in this adoption curve. Like, the first 2.5% is the innovators. We're at like 1.3%. And so we see a lot of the people that are curious, risk taking, want to try new things. And then I think young people, like, they are curious about the future. They want to ask questions and try new things. Some other reports I was looking at this summer from all the consulting firms, EY, Deloitte, they say what's glaringly clear is that young people, like, more than 70% don't want to follow the traditional paths of life, you know, want to go out, pursue their own thing, that, you know, most of them are scared to set up long-term goals because of economic uncertainty. Like, the greatest fear is related to the economy above, you know, things like personal safety. And also, like, their greatest, you know, I don't know the correct phrasing anymore, but what they really focused on is others and supporting others and their rights. And so I think, you know, Bitcoin and Gen Z, both born in this same generation, like, they're such a good fit for each other. And it's just kind of helping connect those dots and make that more clear.
Absolutely. And I think if you're able to show it in that perspective or address it in that perspective, it makes the case just that much more concrete for the younger generation, especially, like you said, if you can go ahead and pull up Sam's chart and just price everything in Bitcoin and you can see how it consistently gets cheaper. when you just change the denominator and just instead of fiat or dollars, you change it to Bitcoin. So that's a very interesting take, Ella.
Yeah. And I just also, you know, we are at the very beginning of our lives. You know, most people are getting their first internship, receiving their first salary, first paycheck. Like, you don't have any kind of, I don't know, sunk cost in the old system. Like, just leapfrog it. Like, let's just start in Bitcoin. And so I think, you know, that's also an exciting possibility. You can also even look at, I guess, to go back to your question on kind of the Gen X boomers, by 2045, I think it's like Galaxy, where I was this summer, put out a report last year that up to like $225 billion are predicted to flow into crypto more broadly. And if you just look at, you know, right now, Gen Z is 1997 to 2013. That's the age range or the year range. And so that's like 11 to 27 years old. So that means in 10 years, they're going to be in 21 to 37 years old. And then 20 years, it's going to be 31 to 47 years old. And so like, there's just all of these influences, that I just think we're going to see manifest. Like, yeah, again, the dots connect that, young people, it will just make sense.
It's inevitable. And there has to be a change. The path that we're on is not sustainable. Really quick though, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. Pay with Bitcoin, additional 10% off. So potential for 15% off your entire order. Go to solosatoshi.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate, go to punchplate.com, and Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. It is in Juneau. Alaska is gorgeous. Get your lodging and tickets ASAP. This event will sell out very soon. It is a family-friendly conference, so bring your spouse, bring the children. Check them out at bitcoinalaska.org. I've been asking a ton of questions, Eomar and Bob. Do you guys have any for Ella right now?
Ella, you mentioned that, you know, you're putting the pieces together, and some of the things you said just reminded me of, you know, young people, having some sort of sense of hopelessness in some ways, and like people putting off, you know, getting married, starting families, focusing on a career because you can't really, have all those things maybe in the way you thought without, you know, with the housing expense, the expense of housing being out there and like the ability to own a home. Like, do you get into those conversations with people? Have you, I guess I'm curious to tap into your knowledge about those groups and, or that group of people and understand, like, is that true or are you seeing that?
Yeah, so your question is kind of the numbers tell us that people don't want to buy a house, start a family, but is that true? Is that right, Bob?
Exactly, yep.
Yeah, so I think different ways to answer it. I am very grateful for my friends. I think I have some of the most incredible friendships, and the people around me are really family oriented. Like, they, you know, still call their parents, you know, every day. Or like, I was studying on Saturday with two friends, and one kind of just got up and left, and then it was like, I don't know, an hour and a half later, and she came back and we're like, are you okay? What happened? And she was like, oh, sorry, I was just on the phone with my mom. And so I know the people in my close circle around me, you know, maybe aren't representative of the numbers. But certainly I do think it's still out there that people are worried about, you know, buying a house or how to even think about investing. Like, where do you even begin with that? I would like to believe that Bitcoin allows us to change this, but, Yeah, still, it's kind of a mixed bag. Some, you know, my friends really do want to have kids someday and have a family. Others, less so. So I feel like I have a biased sample population to go off of.
I'm going to bring it back to kind of some of the work you're doing with the Bitcoin Students Network. And what is your perspective on the widespread youth education in America? Do you see these programs that you started at Cornell starting to branch out at like middle school and high school? Or do you think it's just something that has to wait until kids get to their secondary education?
I mean, no, I think the earlier the better. And like, for instance, you can look at what Kathy Wood is doing at the public school in Florida, where they have integrated the curriculum into one of their classes, I believe. It was a long time ago when I saw the announcement. But so, for instance, it is obviously that's like one school out of many, many. In the Bitcoin Students Network, we do have maybe like a handful of high school teachers who have reached out that want to do more work. So there's a school in California called St. Mark's, and the professor there is trying to do a lot of work. Yeah, St. Mark's Lutheran School. I just looked it up. The professor there is trying to do a lot. And predominantly it is just college age. Occasionally I do have a student send me a DM. It's like, hey, I'm in high school, but can I still participate? And I always say, of course, because it's, you know, it's predominantly college, but really it's for everyone. I think education hopefully will change a lot. So I was looking into so I really like linguistics. I was looking into what is the origins of the word education, and it comes from the Latin word, basically educatio. I can't pronounce it right, but it comes there, and that has two meanings. One, referring to kind of transferring knowledge, like pouring it into another person as a vessel. And the other meaning of education being kind of taking out the knowledge from within a person, finding the magic from within a person. And unfortunately today, I think just the more scalable model in education is this idea of just transferring knowledge, of just transferring what is known just after and after. But Bitcoin just totally upends all of that. As we've talked about, it is this new system that is challenging assumptions that we have held and the way we have done things. And so, you know, in a perfect world, I think we get to this model of education where it really is about the individual person and kind of bringing out the knowledge from within them and helping them ask questions and think critically and be confident in making choices and decisions. But that is just not, like, you can't package that. And so there's a quote that I see almost every day here when I walk into one of the buildings. And it basically says that, you know, good education is the awakening of a human being. And so that's what I hope that everyone gets to feel. That's like, oh my gosh, I have been like awakened. I feel excited by learning. And yeah, so that's not what we're seeing, but I hope we get to that. And for instance, want to give a shout out to the University of Austin. I think this is their first year. They're in their second semester now, but I've really enjoyed being subscribed to their Substack and following their tweets and how they're thinking about education.
The University of Austin, they have a Bitcoin program, correct?
Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't believe they received kind of the Bitcoin endowment from Joe Kelly at Unchained. But they don't, to my knowledge, have a true Bitcoin program. And the reason that I feel confident saying that is because I talked to someone there about starting a club. And Thomas Hogan, who just joined them as professor, I got to meet him, at a BPI event last year, and, he's really focused on Bitcoin, but I don't believe they truly have a Bitcoin program yet.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. I know that there's a couple universities. Do you know off the top of your head, Ella, which universities have Bitcoin specific programs?
Yeah.
I think Nick Bhatia has one, correct?
Yes. Yeah, give me one second. I'm just opening this spreadsheet that, okay, so we have Kuro Gray at A&M. He teaches two classes, one in the business school, one in engineering. Then there's Andrew Bailey, who's been at Yale in Singapore, but he's now moving to join Bradley Rettler at the University of Wyoming, but Andrew Bailey has actually open sourced his course. I'm sure he's tweeted about it. And if not, we can share the link, but it's, you know, all of the readings, all of the discussion questions. And then, let's see, I'm just going down. We have, of course, Nick Bhatia. He has, I think, maybe a second iteration of a course now. There's Florin Hilbe in the Philippines at a law school that does a lot of Bitcoin work. I think they have a course there. And then Ryan Holbrook at California State University Northridge, he organizes a lot of really incredible panels. And so it's not, you know, an official course, but definitely, you know, brings the Bitcoin knowledge there. And then, let me see here. There's also, a professor in Brazil, Edil Medeiros. He is doing a lot of Bitcoin work and he is the advisor of a new, Bitcoin Students Network club that just launched. And then, Alvaro, Maria, and I believe also in Brazil, they put together like a true, almost like Bitcoin Masters program. And then I left off a lot of other incredible professors who are kind of just Bitcoiners and, you know, write about Bitcoin, do a lot of wonderful work, but there's not necessarily a official program there. I missed one. Christian Kummerl at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, is also an advisor to a girl who is doing a PhD with a Bitcoin focus.
Oh, so there's definitely quite a few universities that have programs.
Yeah.
A lot more than what I thought.
Yeah. They're all kind of at different stages. And then I also didn't necessarily mention the ones that have like a blockchain. I think the University of Wyoming also has a blockchain miner, as well, but I was just talking about the Bitcoin ones.
Okay. So we're starting to get close to the top of the hour and I have a couple more questions for you. I want to first start off. Last Friday, we had a discussion on our space about creating Bitcoin meetups and what to do, what not to do, and kind of not to be discouraged with the pace it grows. What advice can you give our listeners, if they want to go out and start these Bitcoin meetups or even just groups at their local school or universities?
Yeah, I'll just start quickly. So I put together, I called it like the BSN Startup Guide. It's literally a step-by-step guide if you want to start a club. And there's examples of everything that I built for Cornell. So you can just, you know, copy, paste it, fork it, however you want. So I'll just preface with that. And when I started it, you know, I was like, look, I'm doing this if one person shows up. And I, you know, for me, I just, it really kind of called me. It was like, I have to do this. And so if you have one person that shows up, you know, that is a huge win. And there were days when it was maybe like two people that showed up. And it's kind of, you know, I don't know, it can bring you down a little bit, but just be so excited about those people. And really, just celebrate them and their, you know, interest and curiosity and kind of going outside of what is maybe the norm. Also, I think we see, you know, all of these models of meetups or clubs and, how they're run. But you can make it however you like to do it. And so I have calls every week with students all over who want to start a community or a club. And something make sure to tell them is, look, success, what success looks like is you just kind of get people together to have a conversation that otherwise wouldn't have happened. And so you don't need to book a room on your college campus and have a very, you know, we're meeting from 5 to 6 and this is our topic. How about you just all go have dinner together, something that you were probably doing anyways, or you go for a walk and maybe, you know, the night before you send a short article or a clip of a podcast and you talk about that. That's the goal. That's what success looks like. And so if you're someone that wants to start a meetup or a club, try to see what your schedule already looks like. I mean, I don't know, go grocery shopping together. It doesn't matter the kind of the format. It's just being in community with the other person. Like a network is two nodes. And so just you yourself are one node, just go find someone else. And there you go.
I think that was perfect, Ella. Like again, I think we all have in our mind, it has to be this just grand experience where we just shock and awe everybody. But you're right, just going on a walk or going grocery shopping with somebody is more than enough to go ahead and just answer their questions. So that was perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
We do have ITOD up here. Good morning, sir. If you have a question, I'll go ahead and let you fire away.
All right, sure. Thank you, Coleman. I want to first start with thanks to Ella for coming to this space. Very inspiring, the positivity that you have toward Bitcoin and what you're sharing. I really appreciate that. It's very, very inspiring. My question is, I've been reflecting on like for lack of a better term, the generational knowledge of finances. Growing up as a child who my parents were, you know, children before 1971. When I was growing up, they would, you know, tell me to save. My grandparents would give me piggy banks and basically teaching me to save in fiat, which, you know, not until way, way later in my life did I learn the bad things of inflation and how saving in fiat is not the right way to go. So my question is, in your teachings with your peers, do you have to explain the inflation issue, or is it well understood in your generation already?
You know, I think it can be understood, but maybe not defined. Sometimes it's also framing the knowledge in asking a question, or, you know, it can be as simple as like, I had lunch with a friend yesterday and she was like, eggs have gotten so expensive. Did you see? She's like, now I'm not eating eggs as much. And so like there, they get inflation. Maybe they haven't quite defined it yet. But you just listen. And this is something that I learned. I promise I'm going to answer your question, but this is something that I learned when I was pitching my independent major the first time around. And when they would tell me, you know, oh, why don't you just go study the gold standard? I should have taken that with more grace and kind of understanding of where they might be coming from the fact of, oh, you want me to study kind of a period when we had a more sound money, and kind of just walked along that track, like the clues that people are giving you. So that's sometimes what I have to do, or not what I have to do, what I get to do when I talk to my friends. I also add, you know, the dots kind of click for me when my parents sat me down and we had to make a spreadsheet of just how much it costs to live. So sometimes it's just literally putting pen on paper and looking at the numbers, and then you really can see it.
We have Yomer with a question, and I just want to welcome Juvie to the stage.
So you mentioned, thanks for coming on. And, I was looking through your link tree there, and I saw you open source like a lot of some of the stuff there. So, I think that's really cool and a great way to help others kind of follow the path with hopefully less work. But I want to ask, like, so you mentioned that you had to do, in kind of like independent study, degree, right? I was curious, like, do you see, like, when you're taking like economics classes or, trying to think of like which classes would actually like hold value to somebody that's wanting to study Bitcoin. Like I remember from like economics classes that I took, they were very high level and mostly useless. So I wasn't sure if you're finding any value in economics classes. Are there like, cryptography classes that you're finding value in? Just kind of curious, like where like the signal is starting to cut through the noise in these, previously like traditional classes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say the economics courses that I have taken have only been helpful in kind of showing the other side of the coin. Like, I think I appreciate Austrian economics and that school of thought much more because I know the alternative and kind of the, you know, Keynesian economics that they teach you from high school to college. But I have taken honestly as few as those as I could. Where a lot of my classes have come from is the, kind of philosophy, the psychology, linguistics. I've taken a lot of game theory. I, for instance, took a class last semester called Event Cognition, and it was basically getting at, so one of the books early on that I was introduced to, Sovereign Individual, I'm sure we're all very familiar with it at this point, but, you know, they talk about how it's so hard to perceive transitions as they're underway. And so I wrote my final paper, basically a first attempt at designing a study of does a kind of low time preference way of operating help us actually be more conscious of events and event boundaries and how we experience reality. So like that's an example. Another class I took last semester was called Language and Technology, and I wrote it kind of, again, all of this is also in my link tree, kind of tied to Bitcoin. And then another class I took was the evolution of language. And I wrote my final paper about kind of how language is our interface with reality, if you will, and how there's feedback loops between language evolution, technological evolution, evolution in money, like how those kind of intertwine and feed into each other. And so I probably have not taken courses that you would typically associate with Bitcoin. While it's something I would like to learn more, kind of the cryptography, the technical side of things, that's not the courses that I have been, that's not where my strengths super lie right now. And so I think I also have on there actually all of the courses that I have taken, thus far.
Go ahead, Omar.
I was just going to say, thanks.
Yeah.
I think you said we had, they dropped off, right? There was Julie on the stage that dropped off.
Yes, I think she's trying to get back on here now. I'll try and bring her up really quick. I do have a question for you, Ella. You've done so much at Cornell. I can only imagine your goals and aspirations once you leave. Do you mind sharing that with us?
Oh, absolutely. So I graduate in May, and then I am going to work with Gridless for a couple months in Kenya. And then I will be going back to the Bitcoin mining team that I was on this summer at Galaxy.
It sounds pretty interesting. So good luck with that.
Thank you.
No, absolutely. Best of luck. It looks like we have Julie back on stage. Good morning, ma'am.
Hey. Oh, it looks like she's a listener now.
I think she keeps getting bounced.
Wait, can y'all hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you now.
Okay, good morning. Hi, good morning, everybody. Thanks for letting me up on the stage, and it's great to hear from Ella. I'm a faculty member at in College of Business at Louisiana Tech, and I just really interested in Bitcoin. I've been, I guess, old since it's been about a year now, and I've just been totally addicted to Bitcoin, and I'm working on research to introduce these ideas to some of my students. It's a little bit of a challenge, but I do teach international marketing, and I teach international business MBA level course. And I think it's been, I had a little bit of success last quarter at the end of my international business class. because I tried to introduce them to some ideas about, you know, currency devaluation. You know, I have my MBA students pick out a book to read, and one of the top books on the Zimbabwe dollar crashing and also the economic hitman. So I kind of talked about those issues through the class. You know, I would, you know, every few classes I would bring. Finally, at the end of the class, I had a little spiel on Bitcoin, and they seemed to be interested in it. And I thought that was great. And so I tried to start this quarter off with a bang and just bring it out. And I think they just looked like I was crazy. But anyway, I would, I'm hoping to do that, next quarter when I teach the MBA students. And, you know, Bitcoin, the dollar, currency devaluation and money printing, those sorts of things. But, you know, no one is talking about Bitcoin in marketing. That's my discipline. And, I mean, I've been, you know, there's stuff on NFTs, blockchains, but, you know, nothing about how Bitcoin's a good thing. It's, you know, if it is discussed or like presented or in a paper, it's usually on how, well, here's an example of how, FOMO, you know, how does FOMO work in Bitcoin as a, as an example. But I'm working on a paper right now, and I'm hoping to kind of just introduce Bitcoin to the marketing literature, and really, you know, looking at preference, you know, marketing or behavior. That's a big part of marketing, but also innovation and how companies that are on a Bitcoin standard can, you know, start focusing on product quality and those sorts of things. So that's what the paper is going to be about, and I'm planning to submit it to one of the top marketing journals, and we'll see how that goes. But so that I just wanted to hopefully maybe connect with Ella, and because I'd like to get, you know, really more involved in bringing Bitcoin to higher education in the College of Business. I'm hoping to attend MicroStrategy's Bitcoin for Corporations in May, but I'm not sure if that's going to work out. But thanks. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks for bringing me up to the stage. Really appreciate it.
Oh, Julie, it's such a pleasure to meet you. And I would love to connect and chat with you more after. Just also off the top of my head, one of kind of my biggest supporters here is a grad student in the MBA program, and he's from El Salvador and was a diplomat. And I think he'd also be super eager to anything he could do to help you as well.
You know, one other idea, I've done a lot of study abroad programs. I would love to do a study abroad to El Salvador. That would be so cool. I don't know if that could happen, but I would love, you know, spearhead that if that was, that's a possibility. I mean, we might have to do it, may have to be a multi-university sort of study. I don't know if I'd get enough Louisiana Tech students interested.
Yeah, I'm sending you a DM right now so we can make sure to set up some more time.
Oh, great, great.
Hey, Ella, I'm going to do a time check with you really quick. Do you have a hard stop in 2 minutes?
No, I don't. I just have a call in 12 minutes. So just sometime before then is good.
Okay, we'll start wrapping up the show. I have one thing I want to share with you, but I want to give Lynn the chance to go ahead and ask her question. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Coleman. Thanks for having me up. Ella, congratulations on all the fantastic work that you're doing. I think it's just so important and really exciting to hear. And thank you for open sourcing it, because I think that's super important. My question has to do with career awareness opportunities in Bitcoin. As you know, I'm pretty focused on supporting entrepreneurship and innovation in Bitcoin to help increase the adoption and usage of it. How are you seeing your peers in terms of awareness? Do they think about Bitcoin as a career path, or are they looking at it as an innovation technology that could be as exciting as like AI or some of the other things that have the attention? Or what are you seeing there? I'm just super curious about what future generations are looking at.
Yeah, and so happy to hear your voice, Lynn. I think no, short answer. And that's another reason for the clubs, is because people join a club for community and jobs, kind of an alumni network, a skill set. And so that's actually one thing I think I've
kind of failed on the past year is really the jobs piece and getting that set up. It's kind of just a slow process because, you know, Bitcoin's only been around for, you know, 16 years. It's just all of these companies that exist in the space, like the internship pipelines just don't quite exist yet. And so do a lot of kind of one-off connecting for students. But I think we're at the beginning and it's just getting built. Also, there's just a lot of prestige with kind of going the traditional route that I have found. And we talked about Chaincode earlier, and they, for instance, put together a program where you could apply and they will completely cover your college tuition, and in exchange, you just work on Bitcoin development, over the summer. And it was really hard to get people to truly find out about that. I will also give a shout out. Summer of Bitcoin does incredible work, and they, their applications close February 15th as well. And essentially, if you are kind of a UI UX or student interested more in the technical side, you spend the summer with them and you get paired with a mentor and a stipend. That's really helpful as well, kind of in the job prospects. I think people will once they figure it out, but kind of Julie, back to what you're doing, there's no marketing department for Bitcoin as we joke about. And so really articulating what Bitcoin is. And as you said, Lynn, this innovative technology, I think there's still a lot of work to be done there.
Well, thank you for your frankness. We've got more work to do. Yeah. I'll join Julie on helping to market this opportunity. So.
Yeah. Yomar, do you have your hand up still?
I was just going to respond to Julie earlier. She was talking about like marketing and Bitcoin. You know, one of the things I've been toying around with is, I put it in the chat too, but one of the things I've been toying around with is like Zap-based marketing. So, you know, if you have like the highest Zap value on Nostr, you can put your little message on there. So I can Zap like an account and, you know, tell them to go, you know, read Diligent News. So, you know, it's something interesting. There's been I've seen a couple threads on Nostr on it and stuff too. So it might be something like a thread that you can pull on if you're looking for more stuff to research in that area.
Well, really quick, before we start wrapping this up, I want to be respectful of your time, Ella. This came in from the back channels from one of the Bitcoin veterans. I don't want to take credit for it, but I agree 100% with what he states in this. So it's from Dr. Nick. He goes, I wanted to share my deep appreciation for everything you were doing, Ella. It's hard to overstate the importance of your work. To see young people in your generation pushing this movement forward gives me hope beyond anything I have ever felt before. Being the father of two young daughters, I still strive to instill the values and work ethic in them that you demonstrate on a daily basis. A huge thank you to every young adult who you are working with to make the future more hopeful for humanity. Without anyone to pass the torch to, the flame will die, and you're absolutely making that flame thrive. And again, that was from Dr. Nick.
Oh, that was really kind. Thank you very much. And I also just really want to emphasize, I'm not the only one. There's a lot of other young people doing incredible work. I saw Zach in the space earlier, and another student, Oladapo from Nigeria. And I think I see Zakir still here. So there's just a ton of students all over the world that are doing really, really incredible things day in and day out.
Well, thank you. But I think you're being a little too modest. I think a lot of that's falling on your shoulders. But it says a lot about you. And so I've had the opportunity to talk with your mom quite a bit on this space, and she's done one hell of a job, raising you. So
yeah, she's amazing. And I appreciate you all a lot as well. I mean, the daily intelligence brief that you put out, I see that every morning and appreciate it.
Yeah, that's all, Randy K. So. That's all him. But Ella, we have one last question for you. It'll be really quick.
Okay.
If you were going to eat chili, are you going to eat your chili with beans or with Fritos?
My mom would be disappointed in my answer. But actually maybe I have a follow-up question. I just thought chili always had beans in it. So I'm going to go with that answer, but she's a big Frito pie person. So she would be disappointed in my answer probably.
Well, you have the right answer. So
okay, good.
Chili is supposed to have beans. Everybody but Coleman knows that.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. But that's okay. I still appreciate you coming on the show anyways, Ella, regardless of that final response. But what is the best way that we can support you and what you're doing with Cornell?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's just anyone, if you have a student in your area, if you, maybe are near a local university, kind of just being an outreach to people nearby, that goes a really long way. If you work at a Bitcoin company or, you know, want to support in the internship, pathway, that would also be hugely valuable. And yeah, I think those are the two biggest, ways that would be really grateful for.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ella, for joining us. Again, I'm glad we were finally able to get a date hammered down, and I'm glad you're able to join us. I really enjoyed this.
Yes, no, me too. Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure, and I hope to do it again once you graduate.
I would love that, yes. Once my class schedule has finally stopped moving, so I apologize for all of the changing around.
Hey, no, don't worry about that. It was worth all of that. So thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much, everybody.
Well, thank you. And thank you for everybody who tuned into this space. It does mean a lot to me. We do this every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. Tomorrow, we're going to have Tyler Stevens joining us. He's the co-founder of Space Denver and the author of Bitcoin Mining Heat Reuse. So that'll be tomorrow at 10 a.m. And again, I was really happy with this show. I enjoyed picking Ella's brain, asking these questions, and I think Dr. Nick said it the best with that message. And so, again, we need to make sure that we're doing our part to support the younger generation so that they continue to carry this torch. And so, that's all I have. Yomar, Bob, do you guys have any final comments you want to put out?
I'm just happy that more people know how to properly eat chili.
Hey, Yomar, are you coming to Bitcoin Alaska?
I don't know. It's tight. I'm trying to sell the wife on it, but I have not been able to get a confirmation there yet. So
I just found out I was voluntold that I was going to be making chili at Bitcoin Alaska. So if you come up there, I'll show you how to properly make chili.
I'll say a prayer for all those poor souls that will be subjected to that slop.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe I'll get some more votes swayed in my way. Bob, do you have anything you'd like to add, sir?
No, sir. Another great show. Really appreciate it. I'd encourage everybody to go back and watch the video from last night with Shane and the guests. So it was good stuff.
Yeah, we had Ashton Forbes on the video space last night. There was, on our X handle, there was about 4,500 people that tuned in. And I think over all the channels, they had close to 7,000 viewers. So really big numbers for us. I haven't had a chance to watch that today. So I'm going to try and see if I can listen to it, later on in the afternoon, when I'm just doing my honey-do list. But yeah, go check that out. There's a link up in the nest if you want to just one click, or go check it out on Fountain or Spotify. But thank you all again. I want you to go out there and remember Zella's message today. Just spread the message and just be patient. And remember, it's going to take time. If you only have one person that listens to you, you know, that's better than what you had yesterday. So just have some patience. Extend that time preference just a little bit. But don't shitcoin. It's like trying to light a candle in the middle of a hurricane.